fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side.
Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And we're in an interesting time of year. We're approaching Halloween. We're approaching, for people who practice the spirit tradition of Wicca, Samhain. And they say at this time of the year, the veil gets thinner. And we're also approaching fall equinox. So we're going to talk about something that relates perfectly to it. We're talking about the sacred herbs of Samhain, plants to contact the spirits of the dead. And our guest is Ellen Everett Hopman. And we're so glad to have her with us. Ellen is a master herbalist and lay homeopath who has been a druidic initiate since 1984. She's a founding member of the Order of the White Oak, an archdruidess of the Tribe of the Oak, a former professor at the Grey School of Wizardry, and a member of the Grey Council of Mages and Sages. And she is author of several books, including Secret Medicines from Your Garden, and she lives in Massachusetts. We're so glad to have her with us today. With this book, now, is this simply about Samhain and contacting the dead, or is there much more to this?
Well, as with all my books, if anyone's familiar with my books, what I always do, I'm very interested in the lore, and that's why I wrote the book to begin with. It's just another aspect of herbal lore, but I always include the medicinal properties along with each plant that I discuss. So you get the spiritual properties, you get the fairy lore, you know, stories, quotes from old grimoires and herbals, but you always get the most up-to-date herbal information with all the cautions. I'm very big on cautions, especially because in this book, I talk about flying ointments, and flying ointments are things that people, they're salves that people would spread on their body so that they could fly. You know, we think of witches flying through the air. So we have, I have not found an actual formula that tells you, you know, 2 teaspoons of this, 2 teaspoons of that. I haven't yet found that. So I'm very clear about that in the book. But I have found lists of the different plants that were used in the flying ointments. And basically what people would do is put it on their body and then lie down in front of the fire, probably to stay warm, and then they would fly. And the question is, you know, a lot of these plants are pretty hallucinogenic, pretty toxic, and it looks like what witches were doing when they flew to the Sabbat or they flew to their meetings, you know, the coven rituals and so on. They basically were tripping, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I do talk about that quite a bit, and I do list all those plants, but I put cautions, you know, don't touch it, wear rubber gloves. This could be fatal if you put it in your mouth,
wow.
You know, things like that. I'm very, very careful.
Now, when we talk about, for example, contacting this dead, is this a metaphoric contacting of the dead and kind of a ritual that has significant spiritual significance, or are we actually having a two-way communication with the dead utilizing these herbs?
Well, it depends on the person. There are people who are shamanic practitioners, and yes, you can use the word shamanic even in a Celtic context. It's a universal term. But there are people who are very talented who do have the ability to get messages. You know, there's a whole church, the spiritualist church. There's a whole church devoted to that. You know, there are people that do that. I have not ingested an herb and then, you know, purposefully with my intention contacted a dead person. But I have gotten messages, usually without any planning on my part. You know, I mean, I'll get a message, you know, and I get them different ways. But, you know, birds, usually it's birds will talk to me or appear in right by the kitchen door. That seems to be the big spot. If someone's about to pass over or someone has just passed over, a bird like an owl, or the other day it was a wren, will appear at my kitchen door and start chirping or hooting in a very unusual way, you know, and then that really attracts my attention. And then I go, oh, okay. You know, and then I just wait. And then sure enough, within a few hours, I find out that someone has passed over. But that's me. You know, everybody's different. And these plants, I mean, I have accounts in the book of people who contacted spirits. And I take them at their word. So it's the kind of book that you can use. It's not just a scholarly reference thing to sit on your library. It's a very practical how-to book, as long as you pay attention to the cautions. And I'm serious about that. And in fact, in the book, I mentioned that if something like belladonna, for example, which is pretty poisonous, you can work with the spirit of a plant by taking a homeopathic dilution. You know, homeopathy uses very, very, very dilute amounts of poisons, like henbane, like aconite, you know, which are curative. But if you want to do plant spirit medicine and work with the spirit of a plant that is poisonous, a very safe way would be to use a flower essence or a homeopathic remedy, and then work directly with, I've done that in the past, work with the spirit of the plant.
Now, where do you find these plants? Now, obviously, I'm assuming some of them you could grow if you had enough time, but if you don't have the plant, you pick up the book and say, oh, I want this herb. Where can you find these things? Are they all or most of them readily available?
Most of them, yeah. Most of them you can, Google is a wonderful thing. I mean, there are herb places, especially voodoo-oriented places that carry a lot of these things. But as I said, if you can't find a poisonous herb, look for the homeopathic version, and that you will find, you know, without much trouble at all. And then in the spring, you can always try growing the plant if you can't find it online. Yeah, I would say look for voodoo practitioners, root workers, people like that online. They often have exotic plants.
Now, what is it about the combination of these herbs and the time of the year, Samhain? As I understand it, the veil is supposed to be thinner. Kind of explain to us how they work in combination. I mean, in other words, if you're using this herb at another time of the year, it might not work, but or work as well, but it might work better around this time of year. Well, give us your thoughts on that.
Well, we're working with nature. Nature at the time of Samhain, everything is shutting down. It's going down into the underworld. You know, the juices of the plants are going down under the earth. Everything is still there, but everything is moving down. So it's going into the dark. And then if you think on a psychic level, it's going into the dark recesses of our psyche, the astral plane, you know, our innermost unconscious. It's easier to access those kinds of things when all of nature is cooperating. You know, we have the opposite end of the year, which would be May Day, when everybody's celebrating and the juices are flowing and the sap is rising and everything is going upward, you know. And that's a whole different energy. That's all about fertility and sex and reproduction and having big parties and wearing bright colors and eating gorgeous, you know, fruits and wearing flowers. And that's the opposite side. But at Samhain, everything is contracting. It's becoming dark. It's going within. It's preparing for the winter. You know, winter is supposed to be the time of sleep and dormancy. So everything is preparing for that. So it's the best time to go within and contact the deepest, you know, your ancestors are something that you carry within you, in your cells, in your DNA. It's all there. But, you know, you can do this any time of year. It's just that at this time of year, nature is going to help you.
As I understand, it's not just Samhain, but also the upcoming equinox. Talk to us about that, if you could.
Well, fall equinox is a time of balance. Same thing with spring equinox. It's not light. It's not dark. It's right in the middle. And it's a very important, you know, it's an important time to mark. It's more of an astrological event. And all of the festivals, whether it's the equinoxes, the solstices, Samhain, Imbolc, Bealtaine or Beltane, Lunasa, you should stop. Make an effort to stop and just pay attention to what nature is doing and then give thanks. And for pagans, you know, it's all about giving thanks and being aware of nature, having the what we call the heart to feel nature, to be in tune with nature. And the fall equinox is actually the middle of the harvest. Lunasa, which is around August 1st, but it's actually a three-week event, is when the harvest begins officially. And that's when the first grain gets cut and the first vegetables are being brought in and all that. And then you have the equinox, which is the middle of the harvest, and you stop and you give thanks. And then you have Samhain, which is the official end of the harvest, and you stop and you give thanks, you know. So with the equinox coming up, there are different things that people can do. Just stopping and giving thanks is good if that's all you can do, but just at least remember the day. But if you want to get a little bit fancier, you can have a fire, and that could be in a fireplace or it could be outside. And you make offerings to the fire, things that fire likes, like dry herbs, whiskey, butter, oils, you know, things that a fire would like. And then a very traditional thing to do back in the day, when people had cows and milk the cows by hand and so on, everybody would give the first milk to the fairies. That was the polite, correct thing to do. The first milking always went to the fairies. Well, we don't do that anymore. We go down to the supermarket and we pick up a gallon of milk, right? And we don't even think about where it comes from. So a very nice thing to do is on the festivals, on the high holy days, get a gallon of milk. Go out into nature, find a stone or a ring of stones, if you're lucky enough, and make a milk offering. Because, you know, back in the day, we would have poured just a little bit of milk, but because we can't do that anymore, a larger milk offering is very nice. You can also offer things like honey, apple cider. You can pour it on a stone in the garden or out in the forest. And another nice thing to do at fall equinox, you know, we're gathering herbs at that time. Every year at the fall equinox, gather a bunch of herbs from your garden or from the local farmer's market, wherever you're doing your foraging. And you hang the fresh herbs on the wall. And then you take the herbs from last year, from the previous year, which should be very dry by now, and you can burn those in the fire. So that kind of completes the cycle. If you have an altar, I like to have a fairy altar outside to honor the land spirits and an altar in the house. But it's very nice to put things on the altar like apples and pears and vegetables and, you know, all the things that are being gathered at the equinox, the fruits of that time, carrots, for example, things like that. And just meditate on the bounty and give thanks to all the spirits and all the energies that made those things grow and made them possible. And include the bees, because the bees need all our help.
Yes, agreed. Agreed on that. Very important. Now, what is your favorite herb or ritual or both that you cover in the book? What are a couple of personal favorites?
Personal favorites. Well, there's some standard things. Sage is something I use all the time, white sage. I talk about that in the book. And it's wonderful for purging grief and sorrow and tension out of the house. Or if you know someone who's actively grieving because of a death, you know, you can smudge the house with sage, or you can take the sage flower essence to purify. And burning sage helps the dead to move on. If you think there's a ghost or a spirit that's kind of trapped in the house, sage is just a wonderful all-purpose purifying tool. I use that all year. Another favorite is mugwort. And I actually have a trilogy of novels, the Priestess of the Forest series of novels, which are Iron Age Druid novels. And as I was writing the first novel, I had this vision of a funeral, and it was an Iron Age druidic funeral. And what I saw as I was typing, I saw them sitting around the corpse, and they were burning mugwort, and they were drinking mugwort tea, and they were doing that in order to get a vision of the deceased. And then they would get a message from the recently passed over person before they buried them. And the book came out in February of 2008. And in April of 2008, archaeologists announced that they had just found the first British grave that they thought belonged to a druid. And when they opened it up, there was a container in there, and the container had last held mugwort, artemisia. So that was a very nice little confirmation. Because when I was writing, you know, people said, oh, you channeled those books. I don't know. I don't know what channeling is, but I know that I would kind of go into a trance and see these things. So mugwort is very famous as a healing agent as well. The Anglo-Saxons, it was one of the nine herbs that they used for medicine. It's a great wound healer. It's a psychic herb. It opens up your third eye. And that's why they make dream pillows out of it. If you make a strong mugwort tea, I've done this. You go out on a full moon night, and I drank the tea and went out and sat by a lake, and I could see all the way to the bottom of the lake. And this was a big lake.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a very interesting plant. I think, and those are not poisonous. Sage and mugwort. Sage is also, of course, very healing. You can gargle with it if you have a sore throat. I always add it to my herbal salves as well. I always put a little bit of white sage in there. So I think those are two that I can talk about without getting in too much trouble.
And we want to stress, as you stressed earlier, and I'll say it again, I think it bears repeating, with any of these plants or herbs that have a dangerous aspect to them, be very, very careful indeed if you even decide to move forward with anything in that area. Be very careful, as Ellen says, because, my goodness, you know, we don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Well, I have cautions. Like I said, every single plant, I tell you, you know, avoid it if you have diabetes, avoid it if you're pregnant, avoid it if you have high blood pressure, or this plant could be fatal if ingested. You know, I tell you that. And I hope that people will have the sense to pay attention, because, you know, and then if you have any doubts about something, and like I said, go out, get the homeopathic potency or the flower essence, and you can work with the plant spirit that way. You know, you really need to be very grounded and use your common sense. Yeah.
Now, one thing you talk about in the book, which it just came up on another show. So another guest was talking about it, and I want to get your take on it and explain that maybe the people that don't understand the concept of the Dumb Supper. Tell us about it.
Well, I've been researching it, and Christian Day, who's a witch, he's been researching it, and we've been trying to figure out how old it is, and I do have a whole chapter devoted to it in the book. We can't find evidence going further back than about 1600, but who knows? But it's a very interesting ceremony, and I do give step-by-step instructions for how to do it. Basically, dumb means silent, dumb as in silent, not dumb as in stupid, you know, but dumb as in you don't talk. So basically, you purify your space, and you have a table set up, and you have candles on the table, and you have a seat that's left for where nobody sits, and that's for the spirits. So if it's a particular, say your grandmother just passed over, it might be for her, or it might be for all your ancestors. And people write messages and they leave them next to the candle at their place, or you can put all the candles at the empty place, whatever you want. And basically the host or the priest or priestess serves the meal, and nobody talks. The whole thing is done in silence, and you are opening yourself to get a message because you're inviting the ancestor to come join you for a ritual meal, is basically what it is, in silence, complete silence. So that means that the person running the Dumb Supper has to do a lot of work because they have to clear away all the dishes, they have to serve everybody. And that's why, I mean, I give a lot of instructions and I say, make sure you have assistance. It helps to have assistance. But nobody talks for the whole thing. And the most you can do is maybe when it's done, everybody can troop outside to a fire, sit around the fire. But even then you don't talk. You put notebooks and pens out so people can write down the messages that they got. You know, the impressions that they got from the spirits during the supper. And this is actually, I mean, this goes back thousands of years ago in the Celtic religion. The Celtic religion is very different from, say, Christianity. Christianity, the deity is up in the sky somewhere or distant, and you're always trying to get to the deity. And sometimes in some traditions, you're supposed to feel bad because you're not worthy of the deity, you know, and you're down here and the deity is up there and you have to do all these supplications and things to get the deity to notice you and all this stuff. Well, the Celtic religion had a very different point of view, which was that you would work with a particular deity because they were polytheists. And depending on, you know, if you were a smith, you would have one deity. If you were a poet, you would have a different deity, you know, but whoever your deity was, you were offering them food all the time. And every time the family had a feast or every time it was a big holiday, you would always offer food. Every time you did a ritual, you offer food. And the idea is that the deity has a familial relationship with you. They're part of your family. And that's why they help you or they inspire you, because they're part of your family. It's like turning to your aunt or your uncle, you know, for encouragement or wisdom. You know, they're right there for you. So I think what may be happening here is the Dumb Supper may be a more modern, by modern I mean medieval or even later than medieval, kind of a folk memory of that ancient relationship that people had with their ancestors.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And it's very interesting, as is all of this. Now, what do you think the most misunderstood part is about these practices, because I think when talking to people who are Wiccans and so forth, that there's a lot of misunderstanding and stereotypes. What is a stereotype or something maybe today you'd like to take the opportunity to try to dispel?
Well, that there's something ooky or spooky about contacting your ancestors. I mean, it's, okay, so the way somebody described it to me once, and I think this is beautiful, they said that every living person is the head of a snake with 2 million years of ancestors trailing behind them. So you're the only part of the snake that can talk, that can see, that can be in the world now. But you have all your ancestors behind you. So you are their voice. You are their hands in the world at this time. And that's an amazing, I mean, when you really get that, you know, that you're, and it's true. I mean, a scientist would say that, oh yes, it's in your DNA. You know, your ancestors came from Africa and then they went to Asia, or they went to the Middle East, or they went to Europe, you know, and that's how a scientist would describe it. But it's all in your DNA. And what is that? What are you carrying around? You're carrying around your ancestors, and you're actually carrying around what they ate, what they experienced. There are even studies now saying that trauma gets passed down through the DNA. I mean, we're carrying our ancestors, and we are their voice in this world. So when you contact your ancestors, that's not some dark, spooky thing. It's just you contacting a part of yourself, the rest of the snake. I hope that makes sense, you know?
No, I've never heard that comparison. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we carry them with us at all times. But at Samhain, like I said before, this is the correct time, the easiest time to go within, get in touch with what you've got inside of you already, which is your ancestors, you know, as well as your own experiences. But the world is marvelous. There are many, many layers to what's going on here. You know, it's not all visible.
Well, I was just going to say that's why we have people like you on the show, to help peel back the layers.
Well, I mean, like I said, this is a practical book, The Sacred Herbs of Samhain. And I have in the spring, I have The Sacred Herbs of Beltane is coming out, which is the opposite side of all this, as I mentioned. But these are very practical books. They're books that you will use. I also have a lot of recipes in there. So, I mean, foods for the season. That's something else, is that when you get to know an herb, if it's a culinary herb, might as well incorporate it magically into your diet, you know, and consciously know that you're making magic as you're serving the food. And like I talked about mugwort before, mugwort, when it's young, you can actually put it in salads. You can eat it in fritters, you know, so you're opening your third eye, but you're working with the spirit of that plant, but you can eat it, you can drink it, you can smoke it, you can use it as incense. You know, there's just many ways to use these things.
Well, a fascinating discussion. It's The Sacred Herbs of Samhain, Plants to Contact the Spirits of the Dead. Our guest has been Ellen Everett Hopman. Ellen, where can people find the book and more information about everything you do?
Well, I have a website. My website is ellenevertthopman.com, ELLENEV, as in Victor, ERTHOP, as in Paul, MAN, .com. Or you can go to all the usual places, Amazon, you know, or your local independent bookstore. That would be nice. So.
Agreed. Well, thank you very much for joining us today on The Other Side to discuss The Sacred Herbs of Samhain.
Thank you, and a blessed Samhain to everyone who listens.
And thank you for tuning in to The Other Side. We hope you have a great season, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.